More than 80 million people live in Egypt, but its GDP is only a little larger than the state of Alabama. Although economic concerns have helped fuel dissatisfaction with the Mubarak regime, the protests have also been a major drag on the country's financial system. Joining us now is Max Rodenbeck, Middle East correspondent for The Economist magazine, talking to us from Cairo. Hello.
Hi.
Egypt's banks reopened this week, and the Egyptian pound quickly tumbled in response to the turmoil there. Has there been a rush on the banks?
No, not really. I mean, a lot of the immediate damage seems to have been pretty well contained. And in fact, the Egyptian pound climbed back up again to almost where it was before all the unrest. So the pound is, the currency is pretty stable. Egypt has quite a large foreign currency reserve, which helps keep things in line.
So they have enough cash on hand to meet the demand?
Yes. Yeah. And I think there's been a lot of the potential damage to the currency, for example, was kind of discounted before the events happened.
Well, over the weekend, Reuters ran a report that said Egypt's financial system faces a moment of truth. The fear is that the political turmoil could prompt a financial crisis. You're suggesting that we haven't reached that point yet?
Well, we haven't seen the financial system really fully crank back into action. I mean, I was wondering, for example, the stock exchange here hasn't opened yet, and there are worries that there may be some trouble there when it reopens on Sunday, next Sunday.
What, but, that it might collapse?
Yeah, that there'll be a serious run on Egyptian stocks. But again, the Egyptian stock market had already fallen by 20% from the beginning of this year before it was closed in the middle of this unrest.
When the protests started, there were reports that the country's richest families were fleeing the country, and I'm assuming they took a lot of their money with them.
Well, I suppose the richest people already had most of their money abroad anyway. Again, so I think some of the fears for economic disaster have been exaggerated. I mean, there's some parts of the economy that are suffering really badly, like tourism, for example. But tourism accounts for only 12% of the Egyptian economy, so this tourist season is pretty much wrecked, and that hurts a lot of people. But it doesn't mean that the overall economy is on its knees.
What about the country's gas and oil production? Is that large enough a part of the economy to have a real impact?
Well, there's been no effect on that so far. I mean, that's just kept good. In fact, Egypt may benefit from the higher oil prices that have partly been caused by Egypt's own troubles.
Well, are some businesses more reluctant to work in Egypt? Google executive Wael Tunim was just released yesterday from an Egyptian prison, but I would think that sent a message to foreign business people.
Absolutely. I mean, for sure. I mean, in the short term, I think there will be, lots of effects, and there will probably be, a much lower economic growth this year than previous years. And it may be that all the economic effects have not been felt yet. And already there's a wave of strikes, people asking for more money, and prices have risen, and there are a lot of economic shocks to come, I think. But in the overall picture, it's exactly countries like Egypt that are the places where global economic growth takes place. And in the eyes of some of the more sanguine businessmen that I've talked to here, they think that ultimately this unrest may be good for Egypt, and therefore good for investment, and that a lot has been discounted in Egypt in anticipation of exactly this kind of trouble looming in the future. Well, now that the trouble has happened, the things might actually get better.
Because there'll be fewer there'll be less control over the economy in a more democratic environment?
Yeah, more transparency and perhaps less likelihood of future political shocks.
Didn't the shutdown of the internet have major economic repercussions?
Yes, I think it did. But the Egyptian economy is it's a poor country, and the internet shutdown affected a slice of the economy. But it isn't as absolutely vital to Egypt's economy as it is to an advanced country like the U.S., for example.
Has any of this affected the operation of the Suez Canal?
Not so far, although today there are reports of a strike by some workers on the Suez Canal. So it's not quite clear how many of them. And so far, the operation of the Suez Canal hasn't been affected at all.
Economic dissatisfaction is said to be in large part driving the protest movement, but I've heard reports that most of the protesters are part of the middle class. How large is income inequality in Egypt? And are the poor also as going to Tahrir Square?
Well, that's very true. It has been largely a middle class protest, and most of the issues the really burning issues are political issues, because this is a poor economy, and Egyptians know it's a poor economy, and they know that this can't be turned around right away, and it can't entirely be blamed on the government. But there is a lot of burning resentment against the kind of profiteer class of people who have really made big fortunes out of having close relations to the government and getting, you know, cheap deals on government land or loans from government-owned banks that they might not have gotten if they were applying as normal citizens and not as friends of powerful people. So there is a lot of resentment against the very rich in Egypt.
Is that something that was the result of the transition from when Nasser was kind of making Egypt into a socialist state? Was it similar to what happened at the fall of the Soviet Union, when certain people wound up making a lot of money when everybody else was kind of excluded?
It's quite similar. Yeah, it's not quite as dramatic as happened in Russia in the 1980s under Yeltsin, when these absolutely colossal fortunes were created overnight. But certainly, a lot of Egypt's richest people owe their surprising success in business to having very cozy relationships with people in government who made useful decisions for them. And there's no question about that.
But why has Egypt, which is a country with many brilliant people and wonderfully located, situated, with the Nile going through it and the Suez Canal, why has it had such a stagnant economy? Why has its economy remained depressed, and so many other countries in the Middle East as well?
Well, there's a tremendous amount of bottled-up potential in Egypt. And actually, in the last 5 years or so, the Egyptian economy has done pretty well. But it's done pretty well for, you know, the class of people who own things. For the kind of people who don't own things, life has gotten not worse, but it hasn't improved much. I mean, in the last 5 or 10 years, the middle class has grown a lot in Egypt. There's a lot of positive signs. But one of the reasons why there hasn't been more sustained and rapid growth over a longer period of time is exactly because the government has not managed things very well, and because a lot of Egyptians would prefer not to invest in the country or find it difficult to invest in their own country. The playing field for the economy is not particularly even. If you've got the right connections, things can work for you, and if you don't, they may not work. And, you know, again, this is one reason why a lot of people think that a more democratic and fair Egypt with a better judicial system and so on could actually cause something of an economic takeoff.
Has there been a brain drain?
There's been a brain drain going on for 50 years from Egypt, which is another reason why the country hasn't performed so well. And that is largely due to dissatisfaction with the government.
Well, there are other countries with authoritarian governments that have booming economies: China, Singapore. I could probably come up with a few others.
Well, yeah, I think when you ask about the brain drain, you really put your finger on a very important element, that Egypt just hasn't been generating talent and keeping talent to make things get better faster. It has a really lousy education system, for example, and a country like Singapore has the world's best education system. So there's a pretty dramatic contrast.
President Mubarak has amassed a huge personal fortune, estimated to be up to $70 billion. I'm assuming that involved a lot of graft and corruption and skimming, and I'm sure he's not the only one. Is it possible that any of that money can be returned to the economy?
I think actually there has been a lot of exaggeration about Mubarak's personal wealth, and I would be extremely doubtful about those kinds of numbers. Mubarak has been in president for 30 years, and some of his relatives have certainly profited from being close to the presidency. But these figures of, you know, tens of billions of dollars seem to be radically exaggerated to me. And I think that very few Egyptians believe that Mubarak personally is tainted by that kind of corruption. It's more a question of cronyism of the people around him, and perhaps of Mubarak being too old or just too used to things to really investigate what some of his close associates have been up to. So I would actually cast a lot of doubt on Mubarak being personally implicated in that scale of corruption.
Just one more thing, Max. What's the situation like in Cairo today? Is it kind of the same as it was yesterday?
Well, in the last couple of weeks of unrest, things have been a real roller coaster. It goes up and down a lot. And today, normal life has really come back in a lot of places. But at the same time, the scale of the protests in Liberation Square in the center of the city are bigger than ever. There is an absolutely huge turnout today and in other cities in Egypt, which suggests that the pressure for really far-reaching reform is still on, despite the government's attempts to placate to meet some of the demands. I think the government, there's a feeling here that the government really hasn't gone anywhere near far enough to meet the demand for reform.
I've been speaking to Max Rodenbeck in Cairo. He's the Middle East correspondent for The Economist magazine. Thank you so much.
Thank you.